Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
This morning's class is on the Hindu newspaper, commentary by His Lowliness Bhakti Vikaswami. I think it was 2 days ago. I look on the headlines of the newspapers on the internet. I don't usually go beyond that, but daily. So I think it was 2 days ago I saw the headline that the new government in Britain is going to make an investigation into allegations of torture by MI5, which is an intelligence agency, something like FBI or KGB or CIA or something like that. I'm not sure exactly. I think it's like the FBI is internal, CIA is external. I think it's MI5 is internal. I'm not sure. And MI6 is external. Anyway, something like that. Now you may think, what on earth has this got to do with Krishna consciousness? We came here for a Srimad Bhagavatam class. Well, there's nothing outside the scope of Krishna consciousness. And within Shastra there is much about how society should be organized, what are the proper things to do and improper things that should not be done. As Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, pravritim cha nivritim cha janana vidur asuraha, which Srila Prabhupada translates as, the demons do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. So we should know what to do and what not to do on the basis of Shastra. And we should also know how to reply to people if they ask us questions about social issues. Well, what's the, people may ask, well, what's the ISKCON stand on cloning or global warming? Should we close down all the factories immediately? I don't think anyone's even asking. No one's even asking that. That's our idea. Only we are thinking about that, actually. They're just thinking how to get alternative sources of power. And we're saying, just forget it altogether. Just close all the factories. Or just like when America invaded Iraq. Whoops, it wasn't America invading Iraq. It was the United Nations going to liberate Iraq from Saddam Hussein. Right? They didn't invade it. It wasn't an invasion. This is political talk. Somehow or other, after liberating Iraq from Saddam Hussein, they liked the place so much that they're still there. Surprising. So people may ask us, especially if you're in America at that time, people would ask you. They might ask you. Because it was considered patriotic to support our boys who are going to, what's the name of that place? Who are going to that what's he called? Iraq? Iraq, that's right. They never even heard of it until the first Bush invaded it. Most Americans never heard of Iraq. And they're going in there, they're going in there to fight, and we should support them. We're not exactly sure why, but it's for democracy, that's right. Okay. Support the flag, support the troops. Democracy means Asura Samatvavadam. All demons are the same. So people may ask, are you for this or against this? And also because Srila Prabhupada envisioned a world society based on Vedic principles, to re-establish that, we should also understand what are our social principles? What are the social principles that we advocate? So probably the average reader, when they read about allegations of torture by MI5, would be shocked and disturbed and think, this is very bad. My response was, of course they're torturing people. It would be extremely naive to consider, to think that they're not torturing people. Naive, innocent, stupid. Just stupid, you can just say. It means foolishly uninformed and innocent. English does have its, you know, does have its points, has a very wide vocabulary. Right? What do you think? Is it more than Lithuanian? Must be a broader vocabulary because it's got, it's a big melting pot of languages from all over the world. Anyway, we're not talking about linguistics today. We're talking about real politic, which is another English word, interesting word. I'm sure you don't have a word for that in Tamil. Should there be torture? Should it be allowed? No. In an ideal society. But in an unideal society, such things may be an unhappy necessity. If the MI5 and the MI6 and the CIA and all these hadn't been doing what they were doing, then probably there'd be red flags flying over London and Washington. They would have lost the Cold War. Such things may be necessary in the present demoniac political climate of the world. People become very disturbed at allegations of torture. They'll be sitting, eating their meal with someone else, eating some chicken that had been tortured all its life and saying, oh, it's very bad, you see, they're torturing people. They may be sitting, eating their meal, talking with someone who's also eating the meal, their meal, and discussing how it's very bad that they're torturing people. They themselves are eating some chicken that from its very birth had been tortured and then it was slaughtered. People think nothing of torturing animals, but they think it's very bad to torture humans. This is myopic vision, that means you can't see properly, is possibly or probably a result of the myopic philosophy very poor attempt at philosophy in the Abrahamic religions, that means Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, and their offshoots, that humans have souls, but animals don't. And I believe it's only in the late 19th century that that in Christianity, women, human women, were granted souls. So I don't know what happened to all of them before that. So I don't know why they bother, our devotees go to these interfaith conferences. It's like, you know, you're trained by Einstein and then you go into a group of blabbering children and try and discuss with them. And what are you going to discuss with them? They're just so far away from anything approaching actual knowledge. Of course, the idea that only humans have souls means that you can kill and eat the animals. Very convenient philosophy. So, getting back to real politic or the political considerations, you may think, why am I discussing all these things? Well, Srila Prabhupada did also. And you may say, well, how can you give an opinion on torture in the 21st century based on Shastra? We're supposed to speak according to Shastra. But the conditions in human society were so different in the time when the Shastras were composed, then how can we given in a social opinion based on Shastra that's relevant to the modern age. Therefore, when it said we see through the eye of Shastra, that actually means Guru Sadhu Shastra. What did Srila Prabhupada say about all these things? I'm not aware of his commenting on torture, but one of the more controversial of the many controversial statements that Srila Prabhupada made, one that's definitely not promoted or publicized by ISKCON, that Srila Prabhupada commenting on the Nazi treatment of the Jews in Europe in the 1930s and 40s, commented that's natural. The Jews were acting against the national interest. Now, if this was publicized in the West, the Prabhupada said that, I wouldn't be surprised if the reaction was that they closed down our movement. It's you know, if you say that, if you even call someone a Nazi, it's considered like the worst insult. I know, because I've done it and been caught for it within ISKCON. Feminazis. Now, this doesn't mean that Srila Prabhupada approved of the the treatment of the Nazi, how they solved the problem of Hitler's final solution. His final solution to the Jewish problem was get rid of all the Jews, kill them all. You may not be so aware of this, but in the Western world, it's still very much in the public psyche. The effect of Hitler in the West was highly traumatic. Sorry, I don't know Tamil. It's up to you. If you don't know you don't know English. Yeah, it's difficult to translate. Anyone can help? Anyone can help? Yeah, I'm sorry. What can I say? I should have learned Tamil, but I didn't. It's not that Prabhupada... It's not necessarily so, of course we don't know, but we doubt very much that Prabhupada approved of the extent to which Nazi Germany affected what they called the final solution. Their final solution was to kill all the Jews. Then after that I said that for those in India, you may not be able to relate to this so much, but it's still very... The effect of the Nazis, and it's still very prominent in the Western psyche, because it was a highly traumatic event. But Srila Prabhupada, he accepted the principle that if someone's acting against the national interest, that it's natural for the leaders of the nation to take steps against them, even they may be considered very severe steps. It's just like if someone's a member of a nation and they pass secrets to the enemy, that's treason. That's the worst offense you can make against. It's the worst crime you can do. Recently, Hare Krishna. Recently, one Madhuri Gupta, there's a Sanskrit word for spy, is Guptachar. Anyway, she was an Indian diplomat who was caught handing secrets to Pakistani intelligence agents or whatever. So I was discussing this with one doctor who was treating me. He's also a writer. He's a Hindutva-oriented writer. And he said, yeah, you see, she's a woman, she can be easily trapped. So he didn't elaborate, but you can understand, women can be seduced, and then, you know, then they're then they're trapped. So in these days, women and men are given equal rights, but women should never be given state secrets. Anyway, the spies, with Prabhupada. Prabhupada's response. When Prabhupada was in Delhi in 1971 and Pakistan attacked, then some journalists asked Prabhupada that what should they do? What should be the response? Should we fight or not? With the idea that the sadhu might say, no, you shouldn't fight, especially Gandhi's influence was still very strong at that time. By Gandhi, I mean Mohandas Gandhi, not Rahul Gandhi. But
Gandhi, Mohandas Gandhi.
Yeah, at that time, Gandhi meant, well, Indira was there also. But Prabhupada said, no, they should fight. They should attack and kill them and win. So Prabhupada was very practical. He wasn't a head in the clouds kind of sadhu. So how are we going to get Shastric insights on current issues through the self-realized sadhus, Prabhupada? And Shastra, if we examine Shastra, then it would appear that according to modern standards, it's like far right wing. Right wing is Dakshin Panta, Dakshin Paksha, Dakshin Paksha. That's in Sanskrit. I don't know about Dakshina Paksham, but I don't know what it is in Tamil. Because, oh, that's the south, yeah. No, but that's used for right also, isn't it? Yeah, it should be. Then what should it be? It can't be Purava Paksha because that means the opposite. That's in Tamil. Okay, right wing. Purava Paksha means the opposite opinion. Maybe it means right wing also. What's used for right? I know in they use Vama in Bengali. The Vama Front means the left wing, the communist alliance. Yeah. It seems to be... some more examples of Prabhupada's practicality in the Shastra. Then Shastra endorses capital punishment, which in the modern age is most people think is barbaric. Srila Prabhupada recommended the Shastric punishment for thieves, which is also the Shariat punishment, cut off their hand. It's actually very practical because then they can't steal anymore. It also gives you a lifelong social stigma. And it's also, what's the word? People don't want to do it because it's such a heavy punishment. Deterrent, yeah. Of course, you might not do it for... You'd have to see how to apply that. It might be that the first-time thief who steals two chapatis might not have his hand chopped off. And you have to see also that if someone's actually very hungry with no means of getting food, that may also... It's not just blind justice. It's not just... it's not inhuman. But it's... Srila Prabhupada said in Kashmir 100 years ago, the king, he administered justice like this. There were no thieves. Even if someone dropped some gold coin on the road, no one would dare to pick it up and take it for themselves. That was also there in the USSR before this liberalization, glasnost, and all that. Now, it wasn't a very human regime, but it was... It was totalitarian, not very human, but there were very few thieves. One thing, there wasn't much to steal anyway, but people felt safe. They could walk around, and the crime was not much. But when, But as soon as liberalization of society was effected, immediately the crime spiraled, the crime rate spiraled. That's said in relation to Vena Maharaj also, even though he was a tyrant, but at least he kept the thieves in check, and as soon as he died, there was a major problem that the thieves were, they weren't thieves as long as there was a strong king to check them, but as soon as they got the opportunity, they came out. In certain cities in America also, on occasion, the police have gone on strike and immediately the looters come out. So Srila Prabhupada was very practical about these affairs. In the early 1970s, there were prices of basic commodities in India became extremely high due to hoarding. Hoarding means some merchants, they buy all the stock so no one else can buy it, and then they just sell it at a very high price. It's a highly antisocial policy, which makes the common, it completely wrecks the family economy of the poor people, just so that some people already rich can become very much richer. So Srila Prabhupada said a few of the hoarders should be shot as an example to others. So yeah, this may seem like extreme right-wing. But actually devotees are not right-wing or left-wing or conservative or liberal or any of these modern ideas. Devotees uphold dharma and ultimately parama dharma, which is surrender to Krishna. So within dharma, the kings, they are supposed to be very stern. The names Bhima and Bhishma, they mean fierce and terrible. Gambhira mana, that's not the word. It's what's that word? Anyway, you got that word inside. So, and that's a good quality for a kshatriya. They should be fierce and terrible. Not always, but when required. They should be very liberal also. One of the qualities of kshatriya mentioned in Bhagavad Gita is danam, they're ready to give charity. They can give the whole world. Prithu Maharaj gave away the whole world to the brahmanas. Karna, he was so liberal that he gave away his armor by which he was born with, and his skin and his mukut, what's it, diadem, crown. That was that he had to tear it from his skin. It was born with him. Kavacha, yeah. He was so invincible as long as he had that, and he knew that, or he suspected that it was his enemy coming to take this from him. But because he came in the form of a brahmana, his pride in being charitable, yes, take it, data karna, philanthropist karma. So a king is supposed to rule according to dharma, in which there's human consideration, that it's not just nasty. It's certainly not nasty. In principle, it's not nasty. But persons who act against the interest of others for their own self-interest, they should be punished severely. The very spirit of dharma is one of cultivating selflessness. Everyone in this material world is selfish. They want to enjoy for themselves. So dharma, within this world, dharma, it's inculcated so that people can begin to cultivate selflessness, so that ultimately they can come to the platform of complete selflessness, giving themselves to Krishna. So a person who grossly violates the principle of dharma by attempting to exploit others for his own selfish interest should be punished severely. That is the rule of dharma. So it's not that we want to institute this within ISKCON, because the core of ISKCON is meant for brahmanas. The core, how do you say that? The heart, the central part. So the brahmanas may advise the kshatriyas, execute this person, go to war. They may bless him and give him mantras for fighting, but they themselves will not faint, not physically. And in fighting, as Shakespeare said, all is fair in love and war. In war, everything goes. Actually, there are rules in war. There's a Kshatriya code that you don't strike below the belt. You don't attack. You don't shoot arrows at someone who's running away. There are so many rules to be followed. And up to in medieval Europe also, they had rules of chivalry. So fighting, and they were seriously fighting, but it was there were many rules which you had to follow. In a war, when you're fighting, you're trying to kill. In a battle, you're trying to kill the other party. But still, it's understood there are certain things you can do and certain things you should not do. And neither side would violate those rules. And so both sides can fight, confident that the other side won't violate the rules. So in the fight, the warrior, he won't even think of protecting his lower side because he doesn't think that his opponent would attack him on the lower part of the body. And if someone does break the rule, it's considered very bad. It's just like in a sport like soccer, you're trying to get the ball from one ball into the other opponent's goal, but there are rules you have to follow. If you're a member of the other team has got the ball at his feet, you have to try and get the ball from his feet. So, but one way to do it would be to kick the player. That would be the obvious way to do it. I mean, actually, if your aim is to get the ball from the player, a better way to do it than trying to get the ball is to immobilize the player. Man's running with the ball, you run up to it, you bop him in the face. It works, you can get the ball very easily then. But that would be considered very bad by everyone, probably even your own teammates. So in fighting also you have to follow the rules, at least in the old times there were rules like that. So you can imagine that there must have been like outrage when Krishna told Arjuna, you see this Kan, now you can kill him, he's off his chariot, he's preoccupied, he doesn't have his weapons, kill him now. So everyone must have been outraged, probably even the Pandava forces were doubtful. It's just like, you know, within our ISKCON, we may have strong differences of opinion with another devotee, and we think, look, I got to solve it. You say, well, I solved the problem, we killed him, and no one would approve. Then again, Krishna slapped his thigh when Bhima was fighting with Duryodhana. So these actions have remained controversial even up to today. But after the battle, when he was asked, who asked Krishna, why did you do that? Krishna said, well, he couldn't have won the war, otherwise he had to do it. The means justifies the end. It's a very dangerous philosophy. The means justifies the end. I don't know. In other words, to achieve your goal, you can do anything. That's what it means. So it's a very dangerous philosophy. Because of course, Krishna can understand what the end, what the desirable result is, but someone less perfect than Krishna, he may not understand. In the name of the means justifies the end, especially in the religious field, there have been so many horrible excesses. I saw in book The History of Christianity is like this thick, which is pretty thin for such a topic. So I looked at it, I thought there might be some interesting philosophical discussions or something. But it was just killing, killing, killing. Beginning from Jesus, and then the Christians had been killing each other, killing Jews, killing Muslims. Just killing, killing, killing. The infamous Inquisition in Europe. There's no word for Inquisition. You just have to say Inquisition. Yeah. Infamous. Infamous means infamy is apayash, but it's a different word in Tamil. It means famous, but for being bad. Akirti. There must be a word in Tamil for it. So that was it went over several hundred years. It only ended in the 19th century officially, didn't it? In which to root out heresy, which Upper Siddhanta, I mean the whole of Christianity is Upper Siddhanta anyway, but to root out people who had different wrong ideas to the wrong ideas that the Catholic Church had, they tortured and killed people in rather large numbers. And other things too. But. So the history of the Western world is actually extremely gruesome. And one reason the Western people have become prominent all over the world is because they're extremely aggressive and ruthless. And ruthless means without any principles. You just do whatever you want to get whatever you want. So, beginning from the end of the medieval period, there was, along with the Enlightenment, how are they going to say that? Anyway, at some point in time within Europe, certain thinking people reacted against this excessiveness, excessive zeal in the name of religion. And to make a long story short, many people in the Western world who subscribe to varieties of liberal views are strongly opposed to any kind of what they consider mistreatment of anyone. To make a long story short, many people in the Western world are in principle opposed to what they consider to be mistreatment of anyone. And so, for instance, there's an international movement against capital punishment for anyone in any time, place, or circumstance. They're not against capital punishment of animals, which goes on millions every day. Well, they didn't even do anything to harm anyone, but they never thought of that yet, but still they're against capital punishment. They'll have conferences sitting there eating beef and talking about stopping capital punishment. They take it as an axiomatic principle that all human beings have equal rights, which is nonsense. Obviously, all humans have different capabilities, and they don't have equal rights. Men and women don't have equal rights. However much you legislate men and women to have equal rights, men are not going to start giving birth to children, so they don't have the right to have children. Someone who's born with one leg doesn't have the right to walk in the same way as most other people do. Someone who's very intelligent and someone who's less intelligent, by birth, you can say they have the same right to education, but they don't have the same right by their destiny to access that, to take advantage of it. So recently one psychologist who had been studying the intelligence of men and women all his life came out with the extremely politically incorrect statement that men are more intelligent than women, and every psychologist knows it, but they're afraid to say it. And he said it's not a matter of opinion, it's just plain statistics. Not that every man is more intelligent than every woman, but in general, the difference is marked enough. It's marked enough to be clear. So predominant intellectual outlook in the Western world, which dominates most of the world, is one of unrealistic liberalism. Sorry, it's not an easy lecture today. No, and I wouldn't like to translate it myself into Hindi or Bengali or whatever. Those are the only two languages I know. The predominant intellectual outlook in the Western world, which is dominant, which it's predominant. Predominant Western outlook means predominant in the world. Influencing the whole world, yeah. Anyway, all right, never forget that. That is, what was it?
Liberalism,
yeah, but there was another adjective I used. Unrealistic liberalism. Impractical realism. Impractical liberalism. But the fact that the MI5 is probably torturing people just shows to show that the reality is something quite different. And probably this liberalistic outlook in which they pretend that everyone is equal has given more opportunity to exploitive people to exploit than they would have done had they not had this pseudo-liberal cover to do so. Within the within Vedic culture, for instance, it's very clear everyone's position. They don't pretend that everyone's all the same. There are Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, and they all have different roles, different position, different status, different duties. If they really want to say that everyone's equal in all respects, then why don't they make a 3-year-old the prime minister of the country? Or make a mentally retarded person a president of the country. Well, they usually do that anyway. But or just someone who's not very educated or informed. They just make just pull anyone off the street and just okay, Radha Vinod, you are now the president. They don't have much to do. Prime Minister of India. Now you have to do whatever Sonia Gandhi says. So, I mean, he doesn't understand anything about economics, politics. He has to be in ISKCON a little longer. Some microcosm. It's a little universe, our little universe, which we call ISKCON. We're all fighting among ourselves and, who the outside, who cares, Our little world, our little goldfish bowl. I'm a big GBC, Guru, Sannyasi, the biggest goldfish in the goldfish bowl. So anyway, this liberal ethos has arisen partly as a response to the excesses of various demons in the past who were torturing, killing, without any, excessively. So, violence may be required in humans. It is required in human society as long as we're not in Satya Yoga, even then sometimes. And as long as we're living in a violent and crazy society, then devotees, just like I was saying yesterday, Prabhupada said the devotees should get guns. Not in every case, but in some cases, it's just real. Prabhupada seemed surprised that they didn't have guns. It's not necessary in all cases. I mean, I don't think ISKCON Salem needs a gun at this point. But and probably the best defense is not to have any valuables around. Prabhupada said not to keep gold and silver for the jewels for the deities because that will attract thieves, maybe even from among our own devotees. So don't keep money. Don't keep large sums of money. If there's nothing to steal, then the thieves won't come. That's the best defense. Of course, some valuable things we need to keep, but they should be kept very carefully. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada was, very practical in this regard. And as long as we're living in a society which is ruled by exploitive principles, then we may have to play by their rules to some extent and live pragmatically according to the ethos we live in. All right, well, Hare Krishna, I'll leave it there for now. Just some thoughts to think about, not fully developed thoughts, but as Srila Prabhupada said, we should discuss the teachings of Krishna consciousness from all different angles. And devotees would often bring interesting pieces of information from the news and for Srila Prabhupada to comment on. So this morning I gave class on the Hindu newspaper. We should have our own newspaper, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati did, giving Krishna conscious commentary on social issues. Any questions? Who are we going to torture? Let's find someone and torture them. Bhakti Vikas Swami said it's okay to torture. Okay, ha 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 ha. No, I didn't say that. But I did suggest that it's an unhappy necessity in a torture-ridden society. I did suggest that it's an unhappy necessity in a torture-ridden, in a society that's already full of torture. The animals are tortured and the people are tortured in factories and offices and everyone's mentally torturing everyone else. And these video games, it's all full of like incredible imaginary violence, right? That's the whole theme of it, right? In every one of them, I believe. I mean, not that I've ever played one, that seems to be, it's like the major attraction of the modern age, along with sex, is violence. Sex, violence, and intoxication. These are the three moha, the three great attractions that of modern society, very much in tamagun. Kama, especially sex, to make it more clear. So our response to this is to preach Krishna consciousness, do a lot of Harinam, distribute Prabhupada's books, to raise people from this very low consciousness. But gradually as our movement takes effect and becomes influential, as it should, then we should not just among ourselves discuss these issues, but preach to the leaders of society also. This is how society should be. You have a question? Yeah. There are so many issues in society. Supreme Court, what are you talking about? Which? Well, a Supreme Court judge not in the judgment itself, but he made a comment in relation to the judgment that, well, even Krishna had his girlfriend, something like that. ISKCON didn't make an official statement. I think we should appoint you the official protester. Really? Be a good idea. Let's join up and do something. You feel that ISKCON should make statement. Actually, ISKCON cannot. You want to translate that? ISKCON cannot because it's run by a bureaucracy, which bureaucracies are very slow-moving. Very slow moving, and typically they're very cautious also. And it's very difficult to get a consensus on such a controversial issue. But what we can do is, as individuals, we can make statements. When this news came out about the so-called Paramahamsa Nityananda being less of a Paramahamsa than he was thought to be, by most stupid people, which means most people, then I dictated a statement in English, and it was immediately translated into Gujarati. I was in Gujarat at the time. And a few days later, it came out in the Gujarati Bhagavad Darshan, because it was just ready to go to the press. They just held it for a couple of days and translated it, put it in, and printed it. So I sent it to the English edition, and it will come out in the English edition in India in June, but with a lot of the chili left out of it. The difference is that in Gujarat, the devotees running the Bhagavad Darshan are my disciples. And every edition is highly polemic, spicy. You see, in Gujarat, the most famous upper sampradaya there is the Swaminarayan upper sampradaya. So previously, Gokul Chandra Prabhu was preaching there, and during that time, he made an essay refuting the claims of the Swaminarayan upper sampradaya. So recently, within the last year, I got that from him and gave it to the editors of Bhagavad Darshan, and they ran it as a 3-page feature in the Gujarati Bhagavad Darshan. But if we had to give it to an All India editorial board, I can pretty much guarantee they would not have allowed it. Or if they'd have allowed it, they would have taken all the juice out of it. So there's just like you'd fall asleep when you're reading it. If you look at Back to Godhead during Prabhupada's presence and Back to Godhead now, what a difference. I remember distributing that. We were so enlivened to distribute those Back to Godhead magazines to the public. One of the articles I remember we distributed was called The Demons Among Us. It opened something like this. When we think of a demon, we sometimes maybe think of a fanged monster with 4 heads. But actually a demon might be the person next door or someone working in your factory, or, dear reader, it might be you. All articles, I mean, heavy articles against abortion, how the scientists are cheating, they didn't go to the moon. This, I mean, we were so enthusiastic to distribute this. But now, you know, someone had a birthday party and they chanted, "Happy birthday to you, Hare Krishna to you." And So if you want to do some responses to all these things, you know, don't ask why ISKCON isn't doing it. You have to do it. But you need some mouthpiece or means of support. We can discuss it. Actually, I often thought that we should, you know, we should really roast these Sai Babas and all these people. You're not supposed to say we hate, but I almost hate all these people, these, you know, Sri Sris and Ammas and Appas and Babas and, you know, I mean, why don't we send them to the MI5? You know? They're really, really rascals, demons, cheating people. But I can't say anything against them because I'm, at least not publicly, because I'm not a citizen of India, but you are. I also have the disadvantage of having a institutional position in ISKCON. You don't. I'm an ISKCON sannyasi. I'm a functionary. You know, we're just supposed to smile and be nice. But you don't have to be. You can be as nasty as you like. As long as it's according to Shastra. But nasty, not just nasty. We should expose them in a shastric way. It's calling their names will not help. We have to expose their rascaldom in a shastric manner, an intelligent manner. So, okay, let's do it. I'm all for it. Right? Okay, that's the end of this session. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, who wrote that the Krishna Conscious Movement, the purpose of the Krishna Conscious Movement is to kill all these demons who pose as incarnations of God. That's right in Prabhupada's Bhagavatam purport. So let's do it. Kill them means by exposing their rascaldom. Another question, yeah.
Instead of giving capital punishment and, you know, just sort of cutting their hands, we can give them Krishna consciousness, can help them. Life. No, they can stay a whole lifetime in jail and we can give Krishna consciousness, we can help them.
Did everyone hear the question in Tamil? Possible? It's not the Shastric injunction. One of the reasons given for the Shastric injunction of capital punishment is as a deterrent. I don't know. Can you say in Tamil, someone, deterrent? Something which makes people afraid so they won't do it. If people think, well, if I get caught, I'll live peacefully and take prasadam, then it won't act as a deterrent. Therefore, the term is there in English, real politic. It's just realistic. And no government, what they say on top and what they do underneath is the same. There's always a great difference. It just has to be. That's the difference between a Vedic king and a king in the modern age of hypocrisy. In the modern age, the politicians have to pretend that they're acting for the benefit of the people, whereas in Vedic culture, they actually do act for the benefit of the people. In the modern age, these so-called gurus, they pretend to act for the benefit of their disciples, as for their own name, fame, bank balance, and this and that. Whereas an actual guru does act for the benefit of the disciple. Yeah, all right. Hare Krishna. All right, Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. All glories.